Get me a freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Well, hello and welcome to another Brock and Salk podcast. God, I feel good today, man. You know what? I miss hearing this music every morning. Like, I don't miss talking to you that much, but I miss the music. Like, this would kind of get me...
Who are you talking to? You don't miss who much?
Howdy.
Howdy?
Yeah,
Kyle?
Obviously. Howdy.
Do you think I was talking to you? Don't even try to say that.
No, I was looking at Howdy when I said
it. You guys miss me so much.
That's not true. That's not true. No, I miss it. It kind of would wake me up every morning. 7 a.m., like, it would give me a little adrenaline rush, and... You know, now I get up and I look over and Wendell, like, he refuses to get up. So I'm all, like, have this moment where I'm like, is this dog ever going to get, he's just lying there. I mean, he just like, he wraps himself in the, like in the cover, even when it's hot out, he gets under the covers like a burrito. Like it's yeah. So it's hard to get up and really motivate at times. So I miss the music to kind of get me going. How are you doing?
I'm good. And we actually have blue sky today.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
I mean, I think that's part of it, too, is, you know, you're getting up to sunshine. It's always easier than that marine layer for the first 14 days of July.
It's true. I mean, summer's going to be over in like 2 weeks. But, yeah, it's nice to see that we've finally gotten here. And summer camp, of course, going on for the Mariners, where their hitters are just they've gone crazy. Everybody's hitting home runs, et cetera. So we are pleased to talk to Scott Servais today, which is going to be a lot of fun. Would you say Scott is he the most famous person that we've had now on this version here with the podcast?
Probably. I mean, he's bigger than Mike Tirico.
I think
right?
so. Yeah.
He's bigger than Phil Sims.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah.
He's bigger than Al Michaels. Yeah. I mean, I would think so.
Scott Servais taking a few minutes with us here. Hi, Scott. How are you?
That's great for you guys to mix in some baseball. I really appreciate you having me on. No, it's been a while since we've been talking, but... Finally, get something to talk about. So excited to be back here at T-Mobile. We're getting summer camp, and we're floating along here, just waiting for opportunity to get to opening day. And so far, so good.
How weird is this?
It's different. No question about it. I think I'm enjoying it. Quite frankly, it's great to get back and do something you love to do, and man, you've been doing it your whole life, and then when it was taken away. You realize how much you miss it. So, and not just me, the coaching staff and the players feel the same way. So, it is different. We have a focal point here. We're trying to get ready to be in Houston here on July 24th and getting, you know, a lot of experience for our young players, and it's been fun.
What was a day in the life of Scott Servais in the month of April or May?
not a happy camper. I stayed... pretty busy doing around the house chores, different projects I would come up with. I was, after we got shut down in Arizona, still have a place in Colorado. So I drove up there, and my wife and I and a couple of our kids came back there as well. So I had projects every day to try to stay away from them because I wasn't very happy. I just love baseball, and it's hard when you don't get a chance to do what you love to do.
What are those projects? What are you doing all day?
I mean, that's where you and Howdy are so similar. Boy, Howdy is a handyman of handymen.
He built a retaining wall during the quarantine.
Retaining wall? Who's he keeping out?
Actually, for the rest of us, we're keeping him in. It's great.
No, I actually live in a pretty rural area in Colorado, and getting proper internet service at the higher speeds has always been a challenge. So my kids have been on me since they were back in high school, and you know, the internet sucks. It's not any good. Dad, when you can get this fixed? So made a few calls, came up with a protocols or whatever. Got somebody hired to come out there, put a new dish thing in, fiber optic cable running it to the house. I had all kinds of stuff going on.
Wow. So you're off AOL now. That's good. It's nice to see you kind of...
Just barely.
So we got to talk about these kids. I mean, you know, last couple of days, you know, what we've seen, the barrage of home runs from your pups. What are we watching here with the hitting?
You know, certainly we've got some young players, really talented guys, and you know, they've jumped on a few mistakes in these games and driven them out of the park. And we saw what Kyle Lewis could do last year when he kind of burst on the scene here. It was awesome to see. And the big thing that stood out for me right when we got back here in Seattle was Kyle was just moving different, much freer. I know he spent a lot of time, you know, during the downtime working with strength coach and speed coach, and it's really the first time I think we all have seen him like completely healthy and not worrying about his knee and all the things he went through there. And you know, when you're an athlete like that, premier athlete, and you are hurt, there's always in the back of your mind. And I think he's free. He's just letting his ability come out and play. It's been great to see. Obviously, Kelnick had a good day yesterday, but we got a very, very talented group here, and getting them experience is really important to salvage something out of this season.
Are you guys amplifying the sound in there, or is that what it sounds like off the bat when no one's in the building?
Yeah, you can't amplify bats. There is a little murmur of some crowd noise and some other stuff, but yeah, those balls have been hit very hard. It's really loud. You know, it's our pitchers, there's been a lot of smack talking going on, and they got a little quieter here the last couple of days, so we need them to bounce back here.
Now, does that sound louder than the sound of Brock missing bunts when you were throwing them? I just want to understand. What, on the noise meter, where were the Kelnick home run, the Lewis home run, and then Brock whiffing on bunt attempts?
Well, just to keep things in perspective, Brock, that's coming from a guy who barely got the ball out of the infield, so don't worry about
Hey, I showed up on like Howdy, who created a pandemic so that he wouldn't have to face you. I mean, let's be clear.
Believe me, I have not forgotten about that. I look forward to that opportunity. Eventually, we will be back in Peoria next spring, hopefully, and when we do, Howdy will be ready to roll. I know I will be ready to roll and can't wait to get that one on video and get it out to everybody.
Unfortunately, he's still stuck behind the retaining wall, so we'll see whether he's able to make it down to Arizona. So with all the smack talking, I know I ask you about this every year, usually at that beat writers deal, but what are the chances of like an intra-squad brawl? Like if the team's never going to actually fight in a game against another team, could we see an inter-squad brawl?
Six feet is a social distance thing, man. Come on. No better than that, you know? Come on.
More legitimate question on Kyle Lewis, and great to hear that he's moving better, and obviously the bat seems to be there right now. How has his defense been? Because watching him last year, it seems like that's one of the things that's sort of still coming around with him. How has that looked early for you?
It's been really good. We've actually played him in center field here the last few days, and that was his position in college, and I think everybody kind of profiled him as just a corner outfielder, but he's more than adequate out there. The jumps in the ball has been really good. Goes back on balls well. He throws pretty well. He looks very comfortable there. He understands the position, and sometimes center field, if you can handle, you know, the position as far as, you know, tracking balls down and doing all the leg work, it's sometimes easier to read the ball off the bat because everything's right in front of you. So far, so good. He will get some time in center field. And he looked great out there, so no concerns on my end at all.
Has there been anything that you've realized, Scott, as you guys have come back to work and come back together, that you think in time you'll look back and go, man, I'm actually thankful for that? Like, we learned this best new practice through this adversity and this separation and everything else. Have there been anything that kind of has jumped out at this point where you're like, gosh, I would not have thought that we could be this effective doing it this way, but it's been a pleasant surprise in that regard?
Yeah, we've seen a number of things already. I think, you know, in baseball, it's so routine orientated, and we get so locked into, you know, you got to put so much time on the field, you know, with all the rounds of batting practice and all the other things that we do. It's just kind of just monotonous over and over routine. And because we've had to be very efficient here with the amount of exposure for the players on the field and around each other, we've really become pretty creative in how we're coming up with practice plans and these inter-squad games and things like that. So it's definitely something we'll carry forward with going, you know, into, you know, the future years. And also, we've split things up on the coaching staff. So, you know, there's days that I'm in the dugout. There's days that I'm sitting in the stands, which is a good perspective. You know, you step back from it a little bit. It's something that, you know, I didn't think I'd be all that comfortable with. It's actually been good for me. So we'll continue to, along those lines. I think once we get into our regular season, and we had some meetings yesterday, you know, when you're preparing for an opponent, you know, you do have a bunch of meetings, and you sit around the clubhouse, and it's coaches, and then it's with the catchers and pitchers and position players. We can't do all that. Clubhouses aren't designed for that with all the social distancing, so we're going to have to do some of those meetings at a hotel. Some of those meetings will be done via Zoom in the hotels. Things like that will have to become more efficient, and we'll spend less time at the ballpark, which isn't always a bad thing because at times you can get burnt out. This is a 60-game season, and everybody says, oh, it's a sprint. It's going to be great. Oh, it's a sprint, but there's no off days in there. You know, we play 20 right out of the chute, so, you know, learning these best practices and how we can be more efficient, I think is definitely going to help us.
How does the game look different when you've sat in the stands?
I've watched a lot of games there, certainly from, you know, my earlier experience before I got this job, and there's just different things. You notice pace of play, tempo of certain players, more body language stuff as you're sitting back, and, you know, there's the obvious, you know, you have a better look at maybe how your outfield, your infield is set and how those guys are moving on balls off the bat and things like that. When you're in the dugout, not the greatest angle. The biggest thing, of course, is you have a better feel for pitching when you're standing behind what they're trying to do, where they're trying to get the ball. When you're off to the side of the dugout, oftentimes you're trying to go in there, you're trying to go down, you know, away and down there. It's hard to tell. So everything looks a little bit different.
I've always wondered that, you know, just and I've talked to people about it, just the idea of being able to tell where the pitch is from your angle in the dugout. Every time I see a manager come out and start arguing balls and strikes, I always start laughing because it seems impossible that you could possibly tell, especially whether a pitch is, you know, left, right. I mean, I get you could see up, down. How could you possibly tell whether it's inside or outside?
Well, when we're on defense, you know, once in a while the catcher has a little sign. He lets me know if he thinks it was a strike. That helps out some. You know, we're on offense. Certainly you're looking at players' reaction and things like that. But you're following the glove, you know, where the catcher's sitting up. Most catchers don't sit up in today's game with the glove off the plate. So, you know, you follow the glove best you can.
I'm going to be spending the entire 60 games now trying to figure out what that signal is. Like, all right, what's the signal that lets them know that that was a problem?
Good luck with that one.
You know, Scott, you've kind of educated all of us in our market here in Seattle, the importance that you believe in these guys getting to know one another. I think that jumped out to Mike and I as much as anything when you came to town with Jerry and your regime and making sure that clubhouse, that the guys spend time together, they got to know one another. You build that culture. Obviously, it's very different in this structure. It's very different in the dynamics, as you've mentioned, kind of from the social distancing and everything else. But yet, I'm going to guess that's still highly important to you. So how are you going about that practice?
It's probably one of the most challenging things, and I do believe very strongly in that. And, you know, you need to break down walls around each other and create a little vulnerability, and that's how you help build relationships. And we are not having the in-clubhouse meetings. We don't have them. It's something that, again, it's become a staple of what we do in spring training. They're fun. It keeps it light and guys loose. I always like them when they're laughing when we walk out to the field every day. They got a smile on their face. They're looking forward to it. This has been a little bit different. You know, the priority here is just we got to get our work in. We have to stay safe. We have to follow the protocols that MLB has in place and, you know, the wearing the mask, the social distancing, washing the hands, all that other stuff. So it's taken you know, I thought it would be a bigger deal. It really hasn't as far as our culture goes. You know, we've got some players in this camp that had never worn a pro uniform before. They just got drafted. And bringing those guys in here, I love, you know, young players and getting to know them and getting them up in front of the group and talking with them and kind of letting the other guys in a little bit on what their background is. Haven't been able to do that, but it's amazing. Players will gravitate. They'll ask questions, you know, when I don't set it up or create the platform for it. So I think we're in a good spot there. It's something that we'll get back to doing when we can have those meetings and things like that. But for where we're at, understanding the priorities of keeping everybody safe and being really efficient with our time, just haven't been able to do it as much.
What does leadership look like in this situation from the players?
I've often talked to you guys about it. It's not just one guy that leads a team. It's a group of guys, and it's shifting within our organization and our team. A lot of the young players that are coming up, and some of them will be with us this year in the big league, some of them, you know, down the road. I give a ton of credit to our people in the minor leagues, you know, and trying to get those players to be comfortable leading. Now, it's one thing to lead your teammates in a minor league team. It's another one to do it in the big league setting. But just being comfortable and talking about the game and talking about different things, you know, in the dugout that is happening. So I like our leadership group. You're still going to have, you know, the Seegers and the Marcos and, you know, those guys. Tom Murphy's been one of those guys for us. But Kyle Lewis is talking a lot more. Evan White has that ability. J.P. Crawford has really stepped up in their own way. You know, I don't want them to get out of you know, their own personalities, but you see that coming, and that's great. That really excites me, you know, going forward, because we do have a lot of young guys that understand the value of it, and they're willing to do it.
It seems like you got one young guy with, like, a lot of confidence, like, a lot of confidence.
Oh, I'll smell you later.
You know, just that I'm comfortable at the plate right now, I think, you know, especially during quarantine and the off season, I got super, super strong, so I wasn't going to have to do a whole lot to get the ball out of the yard.
What is the deal with Jared Kelnick? Is he like this all the time?
He's a good player. he's a good player, and he does work extremely hard. And when he showed up this camp, I joked with him the first day. I'm like, we don't have anything bigger than small T-shirts. Come on, man. Get one that fits. And he straight faces you all the time. He doesn't know if you're kidding or you're serious or whatnot. But super intense young individual that's really talented, and he's going to be fun to watch for Mariners fans for many years to come.
Watch.
So it's fun to see. He brings a different level of intensity, and he loves the game, and he wants to be one of the best players in the game, and he's willing to put in the time and make the sacrifices to do it.
First one, I was looking for something soft. I didn't think that his fastball was going to beat me and was just going to take the approach of a fastball that I was just going to react to it, especially if it was in, and that's kind of just what happened. I got the head out and smell you later.
It's the beauty of young players, guys. It's awesome. And I think everybody, certainly our fan base, you know, they like the personalities, and,
yes,
and we're going to allow those personalities to continue to come out.
So how are you going to navigate this? How are you going to navigate these young guys in a 60-game season with, you know, sometimes you'll hear coaches say, in all different sports, well, you know, the game will tell us, right? The results will tell us. And baseball is so different, as I've learned, with the process versus some of those different results over time. But how are you guys going to navigate some of this really talent, this young, young talent that is a part of the squad right now?
You know, we do have a young team, and everybody knows the direction we're headed. I think our direction hasn't changed at all, even though the season has been shrunk on us. And it's about getting experience for our young players, creating opportunity for them, and understanding that there's, you know, there'll be some struggles along the way, but there are going to be a lot of fun days, too, that we see players do things that they've never had the opportunity to do before, and they're succeeding. And there's nothing better than you see a young player with a smile on his face knowing, wow, I just did that. You know, I knew I could do it, but I had to actually do it. And whether it's getting a big hit or making a big play or a big pitch, you know. So those are going to be fun, fun moments for us all as this group grows together. But like I said, a lot to look forward to. The plan, we still got a ways to go organizationally with the plan. But the first step is, you know, we had to get the talent in here. And Jerry, the guys in the front office, through the draft, trades, our scouting department, awesome job of putting this group together. Now we've got to take the next step. We've got to get them experience in pro ball and certainly starting to crack the door here at the big league level. And then, you know, the final step is, you know, getting in a position where we can win and win and go for championships. So, but first step is getting them in the door. They have our uni on. Awesome to see. And I couldn't be any more excited and pumped on where we're headed.
So what does that look like for them getting that experience this year? So let's take Kelnick just for an example. So he's on the taxi squad. He'll be in Tacoma. What is he doing day to day? I mean, is he going to get to play against other taxi squads as they come in? What does that look like?
It'll be just our players. It'll be 30 guys there. Those guys will probably play games, I would say, about 3 or 4 days a week. The other days they're working out. But in those games, he's facing, you know, a lot of our top-end pitching, and we have a bunch of it. So the quality of the competition he's going to be facing is going to be very, very high. But you know, it's the cards that were dealt with when the pandemic hit and they shut down baseball. Fortunate we're able to get back and play, and then we're able to salvage something of a minor league season, even through the taxi squad, inner squad situation, so we can get Logan Gilbert and, you know, George Kirby and Brandon Williamson, Isaiah Campbell, their innings. Those guys need innings. Jared Kelnick needs at-bats. You know, there's a bunch of players in that boat, so we're able to salvage something. It's not ideal, but that's the plan right now.
Is there, I mean, legitimately, if they're facing each other all that time, I know you're getting a lot of the trash talk and stuff that's good right now. Is there any worry that gets too much where there starts to be a bit of a rift between your pitchers and your hitters?
I don't think so. I really don't. Everybody understands the situation we're in. Like I said, it's not ideal, but it's the best alternative that we have at this point. and we have to make the best out of it. And part of it starts with attitude, you know, with our coaching staff every day, players. I think we have to do everything we can to keep it competitive. These guys like to compete. You know, at the end of our games, you win or you lose. End of an at-bat, you won it or you lost it. And I think we need to continue to keep it competitive. It's not just, okay, we're going to get our work in today. And we've got a lot of creative people around here that will make sure that we do keep an edge on these guys. So, like I said, it's the best we could come up with, that Major League Baseball came up with, and we'll get the most out of it.
Hey, last thing for me, Scott, any other pleasant surprises? I mean, we're seeing the videos and hearing the loud noises in the building, but anybody that's been maybe not getting some of the press or some of the notoriety that you've just been really pleasantly surprised the way they've gone about attacking this?
I think one area that doesn't get enough credit, when you look at our team and where we're at right now, and I made a comment to Jerry the other day, is like our catching. Austin Nola, Tom Murphy, Cal Raleigh coming behind those two guys. Dan Wilson's been in here every day working with our catchers, and those guys are working their tail off, and they don't get enough credit because they aren't maybe the household names, the big names that are going to hit in the middle of your lineup or things like that, but doing the grunt work, working with the young pitchers, you know, working with our pitching coaches and understanding how to get the most out of those guys, I have a great appreciation for that because I know that stuff doesn't always show up on the stat sheet, but it's huge for the development of this group, so I'm really happy with where those guys are at. And, you know, we got a few guys that are competing for, you know, kind of utility-type jobs that have stood out early in camp. Sam Haggerty's having a really good camp. He's a guy that not too many people know about. We got him from the Mets last offseason. In the spring, he'd hurt his arm, didn't play a lot down in Arizona. He's completely healthy now, and he can play shortstop, second base, center field. You can put him really anywhere on the field, and he's a switch hitter, and he's got good speed. So kind of a nice weapon to have off your bench, and he stood out so far this camp.
Scott, you can't really talk to anybody these days without talking about everything that's going on in the world, and certainly the sports world has been turned upside down, first by the pandemic and then, you know, by the political / social issues that have been discussed throughout the country here. What does that look like for you in your position and with your team?
That's a good point you bring up, is about, you know, the changes, you know, in our country and then, you know, with the systemic racism and kind of everybody's heightened awareness around it. It's something that is a big part of not just Seattle, but all over the country and certainly in our clubhouse. You know, we lead the league with, I think we have more African-American players on our 40-man roster than anybody else. So when things started to heighten, the noise got louder, and it was for a good reason, and it was an opportunity for me to kind of step back, being the leader here and understanding, you know, there's some things I need to get better at and I need to learn in hopes of educating our people when they come in, coaches, players, everyone alike. So I've spent a lot of time over the last few months kind of reevaluating and relearning some of the things that I thought I knew were not correct, and then passing that along and having conversations with our young players. We've talked about it as a team, things that are out there we need to be aware of. And what's been great to see in our clubhouse is because we are so diverse, but the group is really pulled together. And all I want to do is create an environment where I do break down some of the walls, so those conversations can happen. It's not for me to judge, or anybody, really. It's just, you know, try to create an environment where we can learn from each other and hopefully make change. That's the goal here. And for us in the world that we live in, it's make change, you know, in baseball. And because we have a number of young players that are outspoken, do a nice job on social media explaining their thoughts and going about it the right way, being respectful there, I'm really proud of our group. And it's not over. It's not just something we talk about here or there. It's something that needs to continue. And I'm a big part of trying to help create change here, you know, in our team, in our sport, around the city, and really throughout the country in any way I can. But I can only do that if I do a better job of educating myself. And that's the change that I've tried to make and pass that along to some of our coaches and a lot of our players.
So how do you do that? I mean, what does that look like for you when this comes down? Who do you talk to? How do you go about learning and listening yourself?
You know, for me, I think it starts with, you know, you're reading, you're listening to podcasts, you're watching documentaries on Netflix, different things that are out there, and just educating myself. You know, I was raised in a small town in Wisconsin, didn't have a lot of exposure to some of the injustices that go on. So just trying to, you know, learn about history and what really happened, maybe not just what we were taught in grade school or high school. So that's the first step. I think the second step is then, you know, I've gone to a few seminars here in Seattle, in Bellevue, just in people's backyards. It's been awesome to see family that we know put together it's kind of really cool, I guess I could call it seminar, but 40 people showed up social distance in somebody's backyard. They brought in 7 or 8 speakers to talk about racism in the Pacific Northwest. What does redlining mean? All those different things that I didn't really know a whole lot about. But for sitting there and listening and seeing how educated some people are on this stuff and their willingness to pass it along was great. And I walked out of there 4 hours later much more educated and being able to share some of those stories with some of our players. You know, I did not know that King County was named after somebody other than Martin Luther King. You know, how would I have ever known? And many of our players didn't know that. It was named after Rufus King. So it's a lot that you'd pick up along the way, and that's all I've tried to do.
That's amazing. It's got to be a really interesting time to be in your shoes and to be one of the 30 people trying to navigate all of the various waters that are necessary to be a major league manager one day. So we appreciate you taking a few minutes. Howdy's been quiet, which has probably been the best part of the interview. He is still ducking you, which is, I think we've confirmed that.
I'm not ducking.
You're ducking.
I'm not ducking anyone.
You ducking.
Howdy, who's going to be the next guy you fix on our team?
Dan Altavilla decided very early on. Dan Altavilla is going to be the guy. I've long thought he had closer ability and potential, and I think we're going to unlock it now.
Did you see his outing the other day?
I have been told it was unbelievable. His slider.
Yeah, it was pretty good. He's throwing 99 with a nasty slider. You really know how to jump on the wagon, man. Tremendous scout.
Howdy knows how to pick him, that's for sure. Vincat, baby. Vincat. All right, Scott, thank you so much. We know you got to get going. We really appreciate it. We'll do it again soon.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
All right, there you go. There's Scott Service, Brock, who I've loved getting to know Scott. I don't think there's any secret about that. I am a fan of his, and I really appreciate it. And I think those last couple answers on what he's done in the last couple of weeks since, you know, some of the social issues have become front and center. Mm-hmm. I think that's why. I mean, that's what I like about him. I don't know whether Scott's the best manager in the big leagues. I'm not saying he is or isn't, but I think he's a really genuine human, and I think that those qualities will continue to help him and serve him
pretty
well.
Pretty thoughtful guy, always has been, as we've talked to him through the years. And, you know, this time that we're living in is full of a lot of thought. I think it echoed a lot of what we have talked about, Mike, in these podcasts the last couple months as well, of trying to learn, of trying to listen. Always mm-hmm. something that we had to do for you and I to get on the same page and break down some of our walls so we could do a show together and work together and all of that good stuff. So, you know, we just personally experienced that over, you know, I think a long time, and neat to see that
they don't have
people
that much
in positions
though.
Of leadership. I think the commissioners, these coaches, these managers, that there's going to be very little, oh, just take this for granted or this is the way we're going to go about doing it. You know, they're going to have to be more thoughtful, and they're going to have sound reasoning, and they're going to have to learn, as he said, 4 or 5 times, is continuing to learn. That's what the best ones in this process are going to continue to do.
And maybe not just learning, but vulnerability.
Yes.
Right? I mean, that's kind of the thing you hear there. And I think that's one of those things leaders tend to, or people put into leadership positions, don't always recognize, is that they can be vulnerable and maybe even have to be vulnerable at times.
Yeah.
Right. That if you are constantly the person with the right answer, I mean, which is obviously me. I mean, like, I've always got the right answer, as you can imagine.
Always.
Right, always. Yeah. No, you got to have some of that vulnerability. And I think Scott does that well. There may be some who think that it's weak. I don't. I think quite the opposite. I think it's one of his better characteristics. And I'm sure it's an interesting time. I really mean it. Imagine being one of the 30 big league managers right now, trying to navigate the pandemic, trying to figure out how to talk to your team about what's going on, trying to figure out how to a 60-game season and what that looks like if you're especially a team that's supposed to contend this year, trying to figure out the taxi squad, which, howdy, let's Let's address that for a moment, buddy.
What do you mean?
The taxi squad. Remember when you changed my mind because you lied to me 2 weeks ago?
I didn't lie.
What do you mean you didn't lie to me? Scott, what are you talking about?
You think Scott Service is so up to date on what's going to be going on with the taxi squad? This is way above his
Howdy.
Pay grade.
What the heck?
He has no
Howdy.
Idea.
Service has no idea.
Howdy.
He doesn't even know.
I had an opinion on the taxi squad. You came to me, gave me new information, which allowed me to change my opinion. I
and
gave
it was not
you
even,
one.
Well, hold on a second. It wasn't even an opinion, Howdy. Howdy had facts.
That's right.
He changed and shaped your opinion with the facts.
And I said, oh, you know what? I didn't realize that. Kyle and I kind of looked at each other like, really?
Have you
that
seen
case?
It? No, I hadn't
I
seen
didn't
it.
Realize that.
Howdy's so, following this closer for sure.
Absolutely. I'm sure he
and
knows what
still
he's talking
he
about.
Yeah. Yes.
But you're not following it closer than the manager.
Of course I am.
No, you're not.
Of course I'm following it closer than Scott
Service. Why would
Service.
You make that up?
Scott Service doesn't know what's going to be happening with the taxi squad. All he knows is they're going to be available to him. That's all he needs to know. They're going to be playing against other teams' taxi squads. Book it. It's going to happen. Major League
Book it like VinCat or book it like you know what
it.
You're talking about?
It's absolutely going to
happen.
Howdy.
They're you
be
you straight up made this
squad.
Up.
I did not
yes,
make
you
it up.
Did.
They're going to be playing inter-squad, not
I have not seen it, read it, heard it anywhere else other than from your big mouth.
Other
and
teams.
Then the skipper came on himself and said that you were wrong.
They're playing
no.
other teams.
No, 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 no. You're shut off his mic for today.
In Howdy's defense, Service has told us he's not even in the dugout anymore. Like, he's just a guy in the stands just like Howdy. he's
no, got hold it. On. That is not true. Howdy is not in the stands.
Well,
Howdy's not anywhere, and nor should he be. Don't let him anywhere near Dan Altavilla. If that guy's all of a sudden figured out his slider, Howdy's going to break it again. Howdy, stay away. Your credibility is shot. You're an embarrassment today. I can't believe you. I'm so bothered by you. You know what? Here's your punishment for today. We're going to talk some more about Jared Kelnick, and I bet you'd love to weigh in.
Oh, yeah.
But you don't get to.
What?
You don't get to weigh in on
Kelnick.
What
do you mean I don't get to
no,
weigh in on
you have
on
to be
Jared
quiet
Kelnick.
For a little while. You can weigh in later. Oh. You can weigh in on DeSean Jackson. You'll have to wait.
Great.
You're not gonna, that's right.
Just what you want to hear.
I want your opinion on anti-Semitism. I don't want to hear what you have to say about Kelnick. How about Kelnick, Brock? Keep your mouth shut over there, Howdy.
I'm trying to think of other Mariners in 11 years that have in any way sounded like him.
Hold on. Other Mariners or other baseball players? How many baseball players? Listen, we played a couple for Scott. I think we left out the best one. Listen to him talking trash about Taijuan Walker.
You know, that's garbage. Because much respect, though, because, you know, I like being called out like that. I think I got much respect for that. But I check swung. And that ball still went far. Had I full swung, that's a new story. That might be three on the day. I wish I could have faced them another time, but, you know, that's just protocol right now.
That's just protocol, bro.
You know, just a kicker, dude.
Just a kicker.
Just protocol
just
right now.
Just kickback.
What do you want? Would have had three.
Would have three. It's just protocol.
Probably hit four tomorrow.
Right.
Can I hear the other one about smell you later?
First one, I was looking for something soft. I didn't think that his fastball was going to beat me and was just going to take the approach of a fastball that I was just going to react to it, especially if it was in. And that's kind of just what happened. I got the head out and smell you later.
Do you say that about your teammate? Like, you say that about an opponent. Like, yeah, that guy's fastball wasn't going to beat me. Your teammate? Like, yeah, that guy's stuff isn't
I think
enough.
He knows full well that they're not going to be teammates. Like, by the time I'm up here and ready to go, this guy's not going to be here anymore.
Nestor Cortez? Howdy, isn't he like a prospect? Not gonna be here anymore.
He's got that going for him.
Yeah, I don't know if he's big time.
That comes when you are physically the most gifted guy in the building. In my life experience.
Look to my left.
What's that?
That's not the case. He sounds just like Howdy. And Howdy doesn't have any physical gifts or really any mental ones. He can't even get the facts of his own stories right. And yet Kelnick sounds more like Howdy than anyone I've ever heard.
But did Howdy convince you for the last 2 weeks with the facts he gave you?
Yeah, but they
this
were
isn't
wrong.
On Howdy. That's on you.
All right. I understand what you're saying. When you are the most physically gifted or the most ridiculously unnecessarily arrogant.
And
like
ridiculously
Howdy.
Jacked like he was able to get during quarantine. Which helped.
He just got strong.
You know, just that I'm comfortable at the plate right now. I think, you know, especially during quarantine and the off season, I got super, super strong. So I wasn't going to have to do a whole lot to get the ball out of the yard.
I remember talking to James Clifford, who I believe is still there, strength and conditioning.
Yep.
And kind of just first impression, right? I mean, Cliff was he's a middle linebacker on the national title team, man. That dude was jacked, 250 pounds, strong, fast, hit you. You know, middle linebackers are just different. Like Dave Wyman, they're just different. They look at you different. I don't know how many times you've talked to Clifford Salk in 11 years, but they always have this look on their face like, yeah, I could just pummel you right now.
He does.
That's the way kind of linebackers look at you.
I find that a lot of people look at me like that, though, so it's really not just a James Clifford thing. I feel like I get that a lot.
But I remember asking him about Kelenic a couple years ago. He's like, that dude is ridiculously strong. Like split squatting 400-plus pounds. Like stuff that you just don't do when you're 18, 19 years old. You know, I mean, he's just a different kind of athlete that we have seen. I mean, that's Mike. I'm not going to say Mike Trout because of a baseball, like, oh, he's going to be the next Mike Trout. That's not fair to him. But physically, when you look at Mike Trout in person, and whether he's got a prescribed HGH deal or not, you just look at him when, you know, you sit in those good seats and he's in the warm-up circle. You're like, that dude just looks differently than just about everybody else. He runs differently. And when you have that kind of skill set, it can affect your mindset in that kind of way. And it's so doggone refreshing because we never heard it in Seattle. Maybe Griffey way back when there was a, you know, he did it with a smile, but there was an athletic arrogance. There was a confidence like, yeah, I'm good. Yeah, nothing's going to be too big for me. I'm ready for this. And it is certainly the aura that you hear out of this young player.
Yeah, you know who he – I mean, there's a Jay Buhner element to him a little bit also. I mean, obviously he's young and all that. But, I think there's some junior, there's some Jay Buhner. I mean, you can kind of hear some of that. Yeah, athletic arrogance is a good way of looking at it. Here's the sad thing, though, Brock. I know 2020 has been sort of long and challenging. That was only last – they only traded for Kelenic last year.
Yeah.
It wasn't like 3 or 4 years ago that you had that conversation.
That was last year?
That was last year. Yeah, I hate to break it to you. 2020's been...
Who's his swing look like?
Who did I hear? I don't know. I don't have a good... there's nobody... I mean, he reminds me a little bit of Josh Donaldson. Not necessarily the swing, but just there's like a, you know, the kind of the way he plays and just sort of watching his body and all that. There's a Josh Donaldson element for me.
Is there a Teixeira in his swing?
I don't. I'd have to go really compare that. I don't have that off the top of my head. It's a good question. Maybe for next week, come back with some.
Can Howdy weigh in on this or no?
No, he's still not allowed to talk about Kelenic.
Does Howdy like the bro-y in him?
No, it doesn't matter. You can't ask
Jared Kelenic has the potential to be the Rob Gronkowski of baseball. Universally beloved, completely out on his own, on an island. Nobody is like this guy. And everyone says, yeah, that's who he is. Well, and he's pretty freaking sweet.
Here's the weird thing about it. I mean, I actually think you're right. He could be. If he ends up being as good
as... He's got to be good. Oh, please.
Absolutely.
If you're not good, you are Nick Franklin, baby. Like, this is bad, bad stuff. Like, you have to be good. And I'm all in. Like, I have been waiting for somebody to come out and just say, look at me. I'm going to make the Mariners great, and I'm going to be great, and I don't care what you say, and I don't care what the history is.
Almost like Tyler O'Neill.
Yeah, there's a little
of
that.
He had a little of that streak.
But he was humbled by kind of the people around him and all that and the years in the minor leagues. This kid doesn't have any of that. There's no need to humble him. You know, other thing that's kind of cool about it is if you're right about that, and if he does end up having that kind of personality, Howdy, and that success, the Julio Rodriguez sort of counterpart to that is because he is not exactly a shrinking violet.
No.
I mean, this is a really bright young kid who's also got a lot of athletic arrogance, who might be just as talented, has a lot of leadership capability, you know, has Shannon will tell you about how he's working and teaching himself and getting stronger with his English. And I mean, like, he's another kid who, when you kind of put that pair together, maybe they balance each other off a little bit. And look, there's a Richard, who was a Brent Stecker, our editor at 710sports.com, mentioned sort of a young Richard Sherman here of like, yeah, I don't mind. I'll say whatever I think to anybody. You know, Sherm gets balanced off with the Cam Chancellor, right, in the Legion of Boom. I don't know whether baseball's ever going, or any sport is ever going to have an Earl Thomas. That's kind of like in its own universe. But Sherm gets balanced off with a Cam. And maybe that's some of what Julio Rodriguez brings, and you kind of get that yin and yang between them.
You think that confidence could help speed up that timeline? The biggest question mark about promoting prospects too early is destroying their confidence. That seems like that would be a monumental task to destroy this kid's confidence.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you do,
It's over.
I mean, he comes up and the myth is broken. I mean, he's toast. Right?
Yeah, yeah, if you do. But, I mean, we're sitting here talking about this. We just said this kid cannot be
humbled. But that's like the Boz getting run over by Bo Jackson. Like, okay, you're
Yeah, but the Boz had size 9 shoes and was pumped up on steroids.
That's fine.
Petite, small, little wrists. He was a small man, pumped up on anabolic steroids. This kid is physically gifted, and you want to measure bat speed, you want to measure arm, I mean,
I'm
the
not,
tools,
I agree
right?
with all that, but if you're 20 years old and you start going against Justin Verlander and Clayton Kershaw and some of the, you know,
oh, he's
guys
got him, bro. He's yeah, totally got him.
Until you don't. And
he's going to be sitting fastball.
Because no, he knows that they can't get that one by him. So,
man, you know, that's garbage.
You think he can't face Justin Verlander?
You know, that's garbage.
Yeah, he thinks he's ready for that. Well, Brock, the sun is out. We're talking summer camp. It's nice. The sun is finally out. You know what that means. Backyard barbecue season, right? So grilling's fun. Obviously, yeah, you love to grill. I love to grill. Kyle's got his Traeger. Like, I mean,
we're great at it.
We're really good. I mean, all each in our own way. But if you're not, or if you just kind of want to take some of that time to do other things, let Famous Dave do all the grilling. Tons of options available online for catering and to go. You got Famous Feasts. You got the Pitmaster favorite combos. You can even order meat by the pound. What do you go by the pound, Howdy? If you go meat by the pound?
You go brisket.
You're going brisket.
You always go brisket when you go meat by the pound. Yep. Absolutely.
He's right.
It is the best.
I would say by
maybe pulled pork
second. Pulled pork second. Here's the thing, though. My favorite is, like, I cannot, with good barbecue, it's ribs.
Yeah. You're going to get ribs by the rack or the half rack.
By the rack, yeah. Let's be clear. And if you haven't been to Famous Dave's, you got to check out St. Louis style spare ribs or whole country roasted chicken, maybe Texas beef brisket, as you were mentioning, Georgia chopped pork. You get a lot of options. They got burgers, wings, sandwiches, home style desserts. I know it's early, but I'm a little hungry here. You're during the tape.
Barbecue sandwich?
They got adult beverages available to go. Perfect to pair with barbecue as well. So here's where you're going to go. togo.famousdaves.com. togo.famousdaves.com. They're open 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. And a really great way to handle your backyard barbecue cookout this year. All right, Brock, let's finish with something slightly serious. Usually we go uplifting and fun at the end, but we'll go a little serious, I think, because there's been a bunch of serious topics here over the last couple of days, the last week or so. I'll start with DeSean Jackson, because that one was fascinating to me, and certainly with my Jewish heritage, et cetera. I spent a lot of time thinking about what he had to say, and I don't know that I can give you just one, like, I can't crystallize it in just one thought, because it's almost more of a process. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
So, you know, for me anyway, and I know people will see this differently. That's okay. My process was, number one, I thought what he said was offensive. I thought it was bigoted or ignorant, or what he wrote, I guess. And you know, I'm offended by it. People should be offended by it. That's bigotry, and that's dangerous, and it's anti-Semitism. And fired, like, yeah, that's okay. Like, I'm not going to shed too many tears if he ends up being punished even more for his actions.
Mm-hmm.
I've also always kind of thought of DeSean Jackson as a knucklehead. Like, I've never really cared. I don't care that much what he thinks, because I don't think he's ever been a great thinker. Does that make sense? Like, we're going to end up talking about Malcolm Jenkins, some of these other people who I think are very thoughtful and spend a lot of time thinking about the world. And, you know, and I think in some ways hearing from them is more interesting to me. People that I've never thought or cared that much about, like DeSean Jackson, like, yeah, okay, well, that's what you think. I think you got problems, so whatever. Mm-hmm. I find it harder to get worked up over words from someone like him.
I would say that's fairly consistent with your personality.
Yeah. And it's not altogether different from, hey, when a bad outfielder makes an error, you shrug your shoulders and go, well, it's a bad outfielder. And when Ichiro makes an error, you go, well, Ichiro, you're getting paid to catch the ball out there. That's what you're good at.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm not really looking for thought leading from DeSean Jackson. There's plenty of other guys out there that I think I do. Here's the other part of it, though, and this is probably the more important part. And this has more to do with, you know, my own experience. I've seen anti-Semitism. I've witnessed anti-Semitism. I've felt it towards myself. I told the story, you know, last week, or did you say this on the podcast? I forget, of the guy when I first got to college, who found out I was Jewish and asked me about whether I had horns.
This was college.
College.
This was not fifth grade.
No, goodness. This is my first. College hadn't even started.
This was someone that got into Pomona.
No, he got into Pitzer, let's be clear.
Oh, okay.
Not a Pomona guy.
Oh, he's a Pitzer guy.
Let's tone it down. No, he didn't go to Pomona. But he was on the football team. He did not make it through year one. He eventually got kicked out of school for selling acid. But he found out he was Jewish or something. But we were eating pork in the dining hall or something. He was like, "Oh man, you're Jewish." I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "Do you have horns?" And the guy wasn't being a jerk. Honestly, he was not trying to like be mean to me.
Did you think he was joking?
I did. I was.
Was he on an acid trip?
Yeah. Wait a minute.
He was from a small town in northeastern California somewhere, and he's like, he'd never met a Jewish person. He's like, "Well, I just always heard that Jewish people have horns." And I was like, "Yeah, no, I don't." I kind of touched the top of my head. I think I'm good here. I think it's just hair. Too much hair, unfortunately. But yeah, no, I no horns. And we ended up having a nice. He was a nice guy. He had never encountered that and had been raised in an ignorant way. I mean, like
pure ignorance.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't a bad guy. Although, the whole getting kicked out of school thing maybe indicates differently, but he and I were friendly after that. Like, I mean, he was a normal dude who was raised with some ignorance. So I've seen it. It's hurtful. I've seen it with my parents. I've seen it with my family. I've seen it break up friendships or cause people. Like, it's problematic. It is not the same thing, in my view, as the systemic racism that's being talked about in this country right now. The anti-Semitism in America tends to be hurtful and prejudiced and bigoted, which is a different thing from being systemic. I don't feel like there are systems in place that have made it harder for me as a Jewish person in America to succeed. And I know other people may disagree with that. Maybe they feel differently. They've experienced more bigotry than me. They grew up in a different place. Certainly the history of the Jewish people is littered and law and is almost defined by oppression and prejudice and bigotry. So I'm not trying to discount the thousands of years that lead up to today, nor certainly would I discount the 6 million Jews who lost their life in the Holocaust. I'm not discounting any of that, but my experience as an American Jew in this era is not one of systems that are keeping me back. Quite frankly, I feel very, very privileged to have led the life that I have. And that's not to say it's because the Jews run the banks or any of the other garbage you'll hear from people. I was raised in a nice spot, and I'm willing to recognize that. I've experienced some of the hurtfulness, but not the oppressiveness of it. Does that make sense?
How about the ignorance?
Absolutely. Ignorant. I think what he said was ignorant. And that's another reason why I'm not like, I wasn't that mad at the guy who asked me about horns, and I'm not that mad at DeSean Jackson. He strikes me as ignorant, not mean, and there is a difference there.
So how do we walk this, as Scott Servais said, when we all have to learn?
Mm-hmm.
Whether it is systemic, whether it is ignorance, whether it is hatred, whether it is, how do we parse this? How do we walk this?
That's
how do we?
Good question. And honestly, it's why I'm much more upset with Steven Jackson. I thought what Steven Jackson did was significantly more offensive and more upsetting because he specifically didn't do what you just said. He reacted to the DeSean Jackson backlash, which was warranted, By doubling down on it. Do you know what I mean? He's saying his message shouldn't be hurt. But come on, man. Like, I found what Steven Jackson said to be much more upsetting than DeSean Jackson because he had time to think about what was being said and actually open up his ears and listen.
Yeah.
And instead of doing so, he opened his mouth and started talking, which is exactly, in my view, what people have been asking others to do right now. Listen.
Two ears, one mouth.
Yeah.
We kind of operate better as husbands. We kind of operate better as coworkers. We kind of operate better as friends. We kind of operate better as teammates. We kind of operate better as a society when we actually use the plural rather than the singular.
Mm-hmm.
When we actually use both ears and really not just hear, in disregard, but to truly listen and try to learn.
And
you have two ears and one mouth.
And if what you've heard over the last month or so is that it's just about bigotry and what's in your heart, then I don't think you've been listening. I mean, that's not what I've heard from people talking about the black experience in America. Yes, they've talked about bigotry. They've mentioned that it's a problem, but they've said specifically it's not just the bigotry. It's what Scott said earlier. It's the redlining. It's the it's the systems in place that send people to prison at an overwhelming rate. It's the nonstop nature of how they feel and how they're treated. That's a really, really big difference from DeSean Jackson making an ignorant anti-Semitic comment. And at least it is for me. And I know that there will be other people and certainly Jews who disagree. I read Mitch Albom's column, and he would probably disagree with me. I thought he made good points. Mm-hmm. I thought he laid out and took this opportunity to really describe the history of the Jewish people and explain how it's one of oppression and seeing ignorance from other people. He brought up the Holocaust. And I agree with everything Mitch Albom said, but I don't think that's really what the conversation is here right now. It's not about that. It's not about bigotry. It's about systems. And I don't know if you got a chance to read Jemele Hill. I thought what she wrote was really great. You know, Jemele Hill got suspended a couple of years ago from ESPN for invoking Hitler's name in a joke, and they suspended her. And she said, "I deserved it. I 100% deserved it, and I didn't know enough about it." And she goes on to say, and I'm not quoting her, but I'm paraphrasing. She basically the tone of the column was, just because black people have experienced a lot of hurtful things doesn't mean that they're an expert on how to handle them themselves or that they're perfect at treating people the way they'd want to be treated. I mean, there is a golden rule element to this whole thing. I like Jemele. I've worked with her a few times in Bristol, and I've always found her to be a really smart, interesting person. I know she's a bit of a controversial one, but my personal experience with her has been very positive. And I think that she's kind of on the right track. Hey,
well,
look,
I hope
when you make mistakes, own it.
I hope DeSean, I hope Steven Jackson would take Julian Edelman's invitation.
Yeah.
Who said, let's go. You spend a day with me. I'll spend a day with you. I'll learn your history. I want to learn. I want to hear from you. I want to attempt to understand a day in the life and where you walk and what you deal with. And likewise, come to the Holocaust Museum so you can understand that history as well. I mean, that's, you know, I think when the Drew Brees and Malcolm Jenkins conversation went down a month ago or so on this podcast, that's what I said. I'm pretty confident that they're going to work this out.
Yeah.
Because they're going to sit down with one another and they're going to learn. And Drew Brees is going to take the time to do his best to listen. And I hope Malcolm Jenkins, you know, likewise would listen to where Drew came from and his heart and see the fiber of who he is as a human being, and that they would work to learn and to grow. And that's the beauty of sport, man. And it's what I miss as much as anything. I tweeted last night, and it was maybe because it was the first like 75 degree late July afternoon at 6 o'clock. And I just kind of tweeted, this feels like a Mariner kind of night. I want it in the background. I want it in the foreground. I want to be sitting in that stadium.
Oh, yeah.
I want the beauty of sport. I want to sit in the stadium and walk in with people of all different backgrounds and all ages and all genders and all races and all come together and enjoy a sporting event, but also, you know, just be around one another and to hopefully learn from one another. It's what any former player misses about their locker room. You know, I was a small town Puyallup kid that grew up around very little racial diversity, went to the University of Washington and had teammates from Compton and had teammates from Houston and had teammates from all over and from the islands and, you know, all different cultures that came together, much sulky as you did, as you explained, with a Northeast acid head that thought you had horns on your head in college, which is unbelievable to me.
It was definitely one of those moments. Like, whoa, I am 3,000 miles from home. Things have changed in a heartbeat here. But look, man, I experienced it in Boston too, maybe not the horns type of thing. But where DeSean Jackson, one of the things here is it's not just that he said something anti-Semitic. He brought up the Holocaust. He brings up Hitler. And I think that's where Julian Edelman is absolutely right to say, and that's where I would probably, you know, have most of my focus with DeSean Jackson is, all right, let's forget about the, you know, the challenges of being Jewish in America today. Yes, anti-Semitic incidents are on the rise. They're up, what was it, 13%, Mitch Albom said, in the last year. So, like, I'm not saying that it's a picnic or that it's perfect. But the history element that you brought up and understanding what it means to have 6 million Jews systematically killed in the Holocaust and the way it went down, I think that is important to understand. So, you know, the last part of it then is Malcolm Jenkins brought, just to kind of put a bow on this, who, again, I have a lot of respect for, and I think is a really smart, thoughtful guy. And I'll just read his quotes. He said, you know, we got to stay focused. All of this back and forth that's going on right now is a distraction. Comments were made and they were wrong. Allow those who were impacted by them to voice their grievances, but we got to stay focused because Breonna Taylor's killers are still not arrested. We're still fighting for justice. We got a lot of work to do, and this ain't it. Stay focused. And there's a lot in there, and you know, it's sort of hard when somebody speaks. You almost like I almost have this desire to go line by line. We got to stay focused. I understand where he's coming from. It's not like the protests of the last few weeks have like ended, you know, all of the systematic oppression. All this back and forth that's going right now is a distraction. Yeah, it is in some ways. Now, you know, that's DeSean Jackson's fault, which I think is what he's saying. He's blaming DeSean and maybe Steven Jackson for creating a distraction. Comments were made and they were wrong. Yes, agreed. Allow those who are impacted by them to voice their grievances. This is the one thing I would disagree with. If only people who are impacted, they're the only ones voicing their grievances.
Yeah.
Then the entire movement that he's a part of right now Correct. Isn't going to work.
Correct.
You've got to be willing to stand up and say something about oppression or about bigotry or about systems or whatever the case may be when you see it. And so the one thing he said that I have a problem with is that. Allow those who are impacted by them to voice their grievances. No.
Nope.
No, it's actually, this should be on you too. And he did. The line before it. He said they were wrong. I mean, like he's not taking his own advice, which is he you know, I'm glad he's actually saying they were wrong. And then the other stuff about needing to stay focused and fighting for justice. Good. I mean, he should continue to fight for the justice that he's seeking. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah. But I think Herm Edwards would tell him, no, this is different. This is Herm told you and I
mm-hmm.
on this podcast. No, Malcolm, this is different. This isn't the 60s. Right. It's everyone is much more involved. Those rallies are not just of one color and one gender and one age group.
They can't be.
They can't. If you're going to have legitimate change in your schools, in your communities, in your homes, is you break down ignorance and you spread love. It cannot be in that isolation.
I think they're being led mostly by Dan Snyder. I think he'll be the one to really create that level of change. Just to finish up the show.
Are we going to have a nickname change next Tuesday? When's this coming?
On our show?
No, I mean, next week's podcast. Are we going to get stuck?
I thought we were going to give Howdy a new nickname. Like, huh? Howdy's kind of run its course. It's time for a new nickname for Howdy.
Oh.
Yeah. After dealing with you today.
Be open to a rebrand.
Yeah. How about just completely phony?
How about baby
liar?
Howdy instead of boy Howdy?
Oh, baby Howdy?
All right,
juvenile well, Howdy.
Slow it down a little.
Daniel Snyder, I don't know that a person could handle the situation worse than he has. He's managed to make everyone mad on all sides of the issue. People who don't want him to change the name of the team are mad because he's caving. And people who do want him to change the name of the team are maybe even more mad because in the release statement that he put out yesterday, he said the name of the team three more times. If you believe that the team name is problematic,
Mike,
stop saying
Mike,
the logo on the letterhead.
What are you doing?
Mike, they've got revenue challenges, okay? That's the only letterhead they had.
Right.
Okay.
Put it on FedEx letterhead. It seems like they own you now anyway. Like, what's the problem?
The number one person he mentioned when trying to come back and get this right. We would like to make this right for our sponsors, our team, and our players
right.
in the community.
Right.
Sponsors were literally
the first
party
thing.
That he mentioned.
So he's making everyone mad. Honestly, is there anybody not mad at Daniel Snyder in the whole country? How does he do that? That is terrible PR.
Well, he's been pretty good at it for a decade or so.
Gosh.
However long he's
on
the
team. How
does
that guy make so much? What did Daniel Snyder do? How did he make his money?
Oh, good question. Howdy, this is where you usually espouse something.
Oh, no, he's
totally wrong.
He's a rum runner.
Sipping rum.
Yeah.
Just an American businessman.
Oh, yeah?
That's all it is.
He's just a businessman.
Snyder
wow.
Communications. How about that?
Communications. I know he owns
marketing
like some...
Marketing Snyder Communications.
He made that much money through marketing? Marketing's pretty close to PR. How could he possibly have been done so well in marketing that he comes up with
well,
this
in
genius 92, strategy?
They expanded into telemarketing. And then they went public. And
now it comes. Maybe I worked for him when I did some telemarketing all those years ago.
He became the youngest ever CEO of a New York Stock Exchange listed company.
Do you understand like how he managed to do that? That's terrible.
He's not been really good at his job for an awful long time. An awful, awful long time. So just let's get to Washington Red Tails And let's move on.
Is that like the red-tail hawk? Is that what that should be?
What's that?
Is that like the red-tail hawk?
No, that would be the nickname for the Tuskegee Airmen, of which George Hickman, a friend of mine, was a part of. George, who passed away in 2012 at the age of 88, was one of the most beautiful people that I was around at the University of Washington, both as a student athlete and the years that followed, going back to the stadium and seeing him and volunteering. He was up in CenturyLink Field as well. You may remember some of his smiles and hugs off the elevators. He was a greeter there as well. Never talked about it. Never, you know, just a humble guy. Didn't tell you about everything that he accomplished, but one of those just beautiful men that that served this country as those Tuskegee Airmen did in such a remarkable way. And I think that'd be a tremendous nickname.
Would you support that?
100%.
That's cool. That's good to hear. I mean, look, you and I have argued about this for a long time. I mean, for however many years I haven't said their name, or at least I've tried not to. That's cool that you feel that way. I guess I didn't know that I'd necessarily wanted to ask you about it because I wasn't sure, but that's cool that I have a lot
I never
of respect
saw
for that.
That term as a derogatory slur. I didn't. Right. I didn't experience that. You know, I think many of their fans, I think even some of the First Nation folks that have been surveyed about it, they didn't. But if others did, and in this day and age that we are trying to learn, that we are trying to have empathy, that we are trying to love, then I think it is the right move to do.
I gotta tell you, man, I love you. I do. What? I do. I love you. You say things like two ears, one mouth, and you live by it.
Yeah.
No, I'm serious. I'm not,
not all the time. Not all the time.
I didn't say you're perfect.
Far from
I love your imperfections too. Don't get me wrong. But I really do. I have, as I think you know and other people know, I have so much respect for you. And I can say this at the end of the podcast because nobody gets to the end. It's fine. Like by now, whenever people's tuned in to listen to Scott or us talk about Jamal Adams, they're not here anymore.
No.
So you can tweet at us. If you actually hear me say nice things about Brock here, you can tweet at me at the Mike Salk or at Brock. What are you now? At Brock Heward?
Yes.
Yeah. You can tweet at us and let us know. But I do mean it, man. You really do listen and you take that seriously. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for it.
Love you, Salk.
I love you too. All right. Next week. Less love, more hate, hopefully, with any luck. Mostly at you, Howdy. Keep your mouth shut. You're the one who's going to be the victim here for good reason after the lying and the laughing and the laughing and the lying and everything else from this week. It's been a lot of fun. We'll catch you guys next week. Till then, the hay.
Barn.
See everybody.
Get to the chopper!